Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The debate in Boston about civil liberties and police surveillance of peaceful political activities continues to heat up. Last week, the American Civil Liberties Union and the National Lawyers Guild of Massachusetts asked the Boston Police Department to stop monitoring demonstrations, interrogating political activists, and listing members of peaceful groups as extremists.
At issue is the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, or BRIC, one of the many so-called fusion centers set up after the 9/11 attacks to coordinate and share information about potential threats among local, state, and federal authorities. After filing suit to obtain hundreds of police records, the ACLU says local police went too far, and they want them to stop.
In a moment, we're going to debate just what these fusion centers do and why, and ask whether they are necessary and even compatible with civil liberties.
But first, some background on the complaint that got all of this started. Cade Crockford is the director of the Technology for Liberty Project with the ACLU of Massachusetts. And Cade, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us of what you found and what concerns you with regard to what Boston police have been doing at the Regional Intelligence Center.
We had requested documents pertaining to our five clients, predominantly anti-war and peace organizations in the Boston area. We knew that the BPD had some reports on our clients, particularly because a few of them were interrogated after a civil disobedience arrest during an action at a protest. And instead of just going through the normal booking process, a number of them were interrogated not only by members of the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, this fusion center, but also by federal law enforcement officials from the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI. The Boston Police Department said that no such interrogation took place and that there was no record of it. It turns out that that's not true. So we sued for these records, and we found, sure enough, a record not only of that particular interrogation, but also a number of so-called intelligence reports written by the Boston Police Department's intelligence unit documenting purely political First Amendment-protected speech.
Is there any evidence that Boston police were going to pursue this or that harassed these people or moved in on them or sought to do anything else other than just keep a record that there was that they were watching them?
Well, surveillance is harassment. It's unconstitutional, actually. So, I mean, these documents show that the Boston Police Department has been spying on these groups for 5 years. Some of them are dated 2007. You know, that kind of long-term surveillance directed at these purely peaceful anti-war organizations chills speech. It chills our First Amendment expression, and that is unconstitutional.
Cade, we did ask a member of the Boston Police Department to join us, but they declined. Last week, Cheryl Fiandaca with the BPD did speak to Boston Public Radio, and she said that the Boston Police are sensitive to the delicate balance between respecting civil liberties but also keeping people safe. So here's what she said.
There is a delicate balance, and I think that the department is very aware of that. And I think it looks at all of the intelligence information very critically to balance the needs of public safety versus the privacy of people and groups. And no one wants to chill free speech. No one wants to do that at all, but we want to make sure that people can participate in these events safely.
So, Cade, respond to that, because I guess the question that comes out of that, aren't the police in a little bit of a difficult spot here? I mean, it's easy to forget where the country was in the wake of 9/11 when these fusion centers were set up.
I think that your listeners should go to our website, aclum.org, and look at the documents for yourselves, because you will find that the delicate balance that she describes is not even close to being struck at the Boston Police Department. These reports show very clearly that the BPD has been spying on people against whom even it does not allege any involvement with criminal activity. These people who have been spied on routinely for years by the Boston Police Department are social workers, college professors, Vietnam veterans, your neighbors. These people are not dangerous.
Now, one of the concerns that you raise as well is that they've been holding on to these records for longer than they should have. Is that right?
That's correct, under BPD's own guidelines, which say the documents should be destroyed after 90 days. Well, we uncovered files from 2007.
Well, let's hear again from Cheryl Fiandaca from the Boston Police Department, speaking last week on Boston Public Radio about that very issue.
These records should not have been kept. I mean, we admitted that. It was a mistake. We don't have any interest in any of those groups. But we do have an interest in public safety, and we do have an interest in gathering information that is helpful to us.
Does that give you any sense of encouragement at all? It was a mistake. The information should not have been kept. Doesn't that satisfy you a little bit?
No. It would have been wonderful to hear from the Boston Police Department an apology, for example, for classifying Pat Scanlon, a Vietnam veteran and an activist with Veterans for Peace, as a, quote, extremist. This is pointing to a much larger problem.
What is that, Kate? And what has to happen to resolve that larger problem?
Right.
In your
the
view?
Larger problem is that since 9/11, our relationship with the government has been exactly flipped. In a democracy, we should know about what the government is doing. After all, it's our money. And the government should know very little to nothing about us, unless it has reason to believe, we call it in the business, reasonable suspicion or probable cause, that we are up to no good, that we're involved in some kind of criminal activity. And if it doesn't, the government should know nothing about me. And that is just not the case anymore. These fusion centers are simply one example of how that relationship has been precisely flipped over the past 10 years. And when we have police officers assigned to the Boston Regional Intelligence Center taking Boston taxpayers' money and spying on Pat Scanlon and Veterans for Peace, instead of out there in the communities where there are murders and rapes and serious crimes, so it threatens our liberty, it's an attack on our democratic values, and it actually keeps us less safe.
All right. Cade Crockford, she's director of the Technology for Liberty Project with the ACLU of Massachusetts. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we did ask representatives from the Boston Police Department and the Department of Homeland Security to join us today, but they declined. So listeners, what do you think? Does it sound like the Boston Regional Intelligence Center is poised to violate your civil liberties? Or do you think the police are doing what's necessary to keep us safe? Are they respecting that delicate balance between keeping order and protecting our privacy? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet or find us on Facebook at Radio Boston. And joining us now to talk about how this situation came to be and specifically about the role of the fusion centers are two people who know a lot about them. Rick Ozzie Nelson is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and he joins us from Washington. And Ozzie Nelson, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
And here in the studio, Thomas Nolan. He's a former Boston police officer. He's also a former senior policy advisor for civil rights and civil liberties at the Department of Homeland Security. Welcome to you, Tom Nolan. Great to have you in.
Thank you.
So let's start with a little background on just what these fusion centers are. We all remember those dark days after the 9/11 attacks and the concern that local, state, and federal law enforcement were unable to connect the dots that might have prevented the attacks. So, Ozzie Nelson, let me start with you. What were these fusion centers, like the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, supposed to do?
Well, thanks for the question, Anthony. I think one of the things that's important to clarify that I think Kate got wrong is that there is a difference between the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, a fusion center, and the Boston Police Department. They have two very different roles and two very different missions. To the point of the fusion center, they were designed, they are designed to do exactly what you're saying, is to enhance information sharing. We've made a lot of progress of doing that across federal agencies, but where we really need to do a better job is sharing information between the state and local governments. And many times, you know, in a case of terrorism or drug trafficking, those individuals are going to be the true first responders. And it's important that the federal government equip them with the information they need to provide for the public safety.
Well, you just heard that concern expressed by the ACLU of Massachusetts. What you heard in terms of what's been going on in Boston, members from the local fusion center surveilling, keeping records on legitimate protest groups without any apparent link to crime or terrorism. Does that suggest to you, Ozzie, that the Intelligence Center has gone a little bit off track?
Well, I think that, you know, organizations like the ACLU play a very valuable role in having these conversations, because the truth is we haven't found the right balance between, you know, privacy, civil liberties, and security. And that's something with all the information out there that we're going to have to define and get better at going forward. And so, you know, it seems here that, you know, there were some missteps. I don't know whether they were on the part of BPD or in BRIC, but there were some missteps such as keeping documents for too long. I think some of the accusations of spying or interrogating are pretty strong words, and I don't think necessarily are appropriate to be used here.
Well, the ACLU would probably disagree with that, but let me turn to Thomas Nolan. You work for the Department of Homeland Security. Did the Boston Police go beyond what was appropriate given the mandate of these fusion centers?
Well, I think part of the issue that arises and is problematic is that you have police officers who are assigned to the BRIC, the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, in addition to intelligence analysts. And I think that over the years since the BRIC was established, that the mission has morphed from one where initially the mandate was to identify criminal activity that would relate to terrorism, to one where we see instances like this where peaceful groups who are engaging in constitutionally protected activity are being monitored, surveilled, and interrogated by Boston police officers. And what concerns us, what we ought to be concerned with, is that records are being made and memorialized and stored in databases that we have no idea where they're going to end up or how long they're going to remain there or who's going to have access to them. So these issues we should be concerned about this for sure.
And does it suggest to you that there's a larger problem with how these fusion centers are being operated or overseen or not being overseen in the right way?
With some of the fusion centers, part of my responsibility when I worked in Washington, D.C., was to travel across the country and deliver training to the 77 fusion centers that we have now on issues relating to civil rights and civil liberties, and using examples of missteps that have occurred in the past, where, for example, information was collected on Code Pink, a group that has been surveilled by officials with BRIC, and reports have been generated as a result of that. We would use that as a training point of what not to do when you're collecting intelligence.
So one more question to you, Tom Nelson, before I go back to Ozzy, but I'm just curious, does it sound like what happened here in Boston was a lack of training, or what's your sort of diagnosis of the problem here?
As far as I know, the BRIC has not received civil rights and civil liberties training. This is a training that we delivered when I worked for the government, would be a full-day training, and it sounds like it's at the very least a training issue, a lapse in training, where we would immediately bring to the attention of intel analysts and officers who are assigned to the BRIC that this is specifically something that you should avoid absent any kind of lawful predicate. And a lawful predicate is some link to criminal activity that you have a firm and grounded basis in believing some people associated with the group you're surveilling are engaged in, and you don't have that here.
Well, listeners, we'd like to invite you into this conversation. What do you think? Does it sound like the Boston Regional Intelligence Center is poised to violate civil liberties? Do you think the police are doing what's necessary to keep us safe? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Ozzy Nelson, as you know, there was a report not long ago issued by congressional investigators that found these fusion centers have failed to provide much useful intelligence. That was the conclusion of this report. It was pretty scathing. It found that these centers forwarded intelligence of uneven quality, endangered citizens' civil liberties and privacy, and often collected information unrelated to terrorism. Does that suggest that these centers need to be rethought, need to be reconceived in some way?
I mean, Anthony, Tom brings up some very valid points. You know, the issue of the training is critical, and that's why I think that, you know, the fusion centers are important, is that we are going to have this massive amount of information about U.S. citizens out there, and if it is going to be accessed, then I think we need to have an entity accessing that we have oversight and that is transparent. And while there may have been seen as not transparent, at the end of the day, they did get the documents that they requested. Maybe not all of them yet, but they certainly have brought this to light. Regarding the study, I think, you know, that the Homeland Security chair is Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins, both senators from New England, hardly, you know, conservative stalwarts, both came out very critical of that report from their colleagues, basically, you know, saying it was contradictory and in many places flat out wrong and filled with broad assertions. So it's very easy to hang the hat, our hats, on that one review by the Senate, particular Senate investigations team. But there's also other critical members of the Senate who are well respected and have been doing this for a very long time that do not agree with the findings of the report and actually see the value in the fusion center. So it's important to keep this conversation balanced, because at the end of the day, the solution to the answers to this is going to be somewhere in the middle.
Sure. No question about it, and we appreciate balance. But tell us, Ozzie Nelson, if you would, I mean, do we know, it hasn't been, you know, in the span of history, it hasn't been that long since these fusion centers have been up and running. And as you said, they're a work in progress. Have they produced valuable intelligence and helped, head off a terrorist attack, for example, as far as we know?
Well, I think, for example, with the Nazi case, a couple years ago was in Denver, the Denver Fusion Center was very instrumental in helping get law enforcement officials information to facilitate, their interdicting of this terrorist attack. I think that's one of the greatest successes the Fusion Centers have been seen, and that's very widely reported.
Mm. I'm confused, and maybe you can both help me with this. Thomas Nolan, let me come back to you. Just in terms of the role of the Fusion Center, isn't the counterterrorism work being done mostly in the U.S. out of the National Counterterrorism Center, which is part of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence? In other words, are these fusion centers necessary? Are they redundant with other agencies that are already up and running?
I think that's a fair question to ask. I think there is a certain amount of overlap, and we see that Department of Justice has an apparatus that is not unlike the Fusion Center's apparatus as it's set up. And I think that we have no idea how much money we're spending. DHS doesn't even know how much they're expending in funding these fusion centers. Estimates vary from, $200 to $300 million to $250 million range. So there is, without doubt, a certain amount of overlap. And it's a fair question to ask as to whether or not the value that's attached to our expenditures is a valid one.
Yeah, Ozzie Nelson, same question to you, and I'll bring up that congressional investigation, which you rightly point out has some detractors, but the investigators also found that, among other things, federal officials can't account for as much as $1.4 billion in taxpayer money earmarked for these fusion centers.
Yeah, Anthony, let me be very clear. Again, these are a work in progress, and as well as our handling of how we're going to balance security and civil liberties and privacy, we haven't got that right.
Yeah.
We're nowhere near getting it right. And so these issues that the ACLU is bringing up are very valid and need to be addressed. You know, the issue of overlap with NCTC is a very fair point and a good question, but NCTC is a national center. It's a federal-level center. You know, what we want at the end of the day is we want to really equip those state and local governments with the resources they need to provide for the public safety.
Mm.
You know, we look at 9/11, and we look at Washington, D.C., the Pentagon bombing, or even in Western Pennsylvania when the flight went down there, the first people on the scene were not federal employees. The first people on the scenes were state and local responders. So how do you get them the information they need to provide for the public security of their citizens? All that information residing only in Washington, D.C. doesn't do well for the residents of Boston, Massachusetts.
We've got a few callers that want to get on in this conversation, so let's go to them now. Casey is calling from Government Center. Hi, Casey. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you very much. I'm asking, listening to this conversation, it sounds like these employees at these centers don't have enough work to do as far as terrorism, so they're starting to look at other avenues to justify their means, and that's why they're spying on these groups outside the terrorism activities.
Casey, I'll put that question to Tom Nolan.
I think that's an accurate observation. I think originally, as conceived, I said earlier, to combat terrorism and criminality related to terrorism, the mission has morphed, and now the paradigm is, for many of the fusion centers, an all crimes, all hazards model, where they purport to investigate ongoing criminal activity, And I think that the link between surveilling protesters and criminal activity is a tenuous one at best.
Mm.
So that's an accurate observation on the part of that caller.
Ozzie Nelson, do you want to respond to Casey?
Oh, I just want to be very clear to point out, I know Tom knows this as well. I mean, the fusion centers don't conduct investigations. You know, they don't, not a law enforcement entity. Well, they may have law enforcement officers, you know, working in the center. The authority to conduct an investigation, the authority to arrest, resides with the local police force, in this case, the Boston Police Department.
Okay. Glad for that clarification. Let's go to Diana, who's calling from Worcester. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
So I'm 20 years old. I'm a WPI student. I'm someone who's very aware of technology and things like that. So for half my life now, technology is being used to survey citizens that have done nothing wrong. It's becoming the new norm. And for people my age who have always lived with this, who might not know their constitutional rights as well, they're living in this new norm. And currently, the norm is to abuse and not get our constitutional rights protected from these sorts of centers. How are you going to go forward and correct it when everyone else is just living with it and accepting it and not knowing it's wrong? How can you say it's going to get better?
Diana, it's a big and important question, and let me start with Tom Nolan. How do we balance Diana's concern with a legitimate need for the kind of connect-the-dots law enforcement and counterterrorism policing that we obviously require?
I think having the kind of conversation that we're having today is certainly a good start. I applaud the ACLU for continuing to hold agencies like the BRIC and other fusion centers feet to the collective fire and bringing the glare of the public spotlight onto the fusion centers, because all too often I think what they're doing is completely out of the spotlight, out of the public eye, and lacks transparency. So until and unless we continue to have this kind of exposure and this kind of dialogue, we're going to continue to see questionable surveillance operations of people engaging in constitutionally protected activity.
Hmm. And Ozzie Nelson, same question to you. I think Diana raised a concern that we'd appreciate an answer from. This idea about how to balance civil rights with legitimate policing.
I mean, Diana brings out a great point. I mean, if you look at, you know, Moore's Law, shorthanding, that basically says technology doubles every 18 months, I promise you that our policies and our laws are not keeping pace with technology. So that means we're getting exponentially behind when it comes in determining how we want to handle this information. When we talk about this type of information, though, we do have to expand the conversation to look at how the private sector is using this as well. You're looking at Facebook with 900 million pictures on it, users on there. It's the largest facial recognition database in the world, albeit a private entity one. When you walk down the street of Boston, there's multiple cameras and private sector cameras that are taking your picture. So this is a new societal norm with a lot of very difficult questions that we have not answered from a legal perspective and have not answered from policy perspective, and we need to start doing that, and it starts with Capitol Hill and with representatives of the American people to address these.
Mm. And what about the case, the point that we heard from Cade Crockford with the ACLU, that if you have local police working on this stuff, they're not fighting crime in the streets. They're not doing the stuff that we expect our local cops to do. Ozzie Nelson, is that a fair concern? And does it raise the sort of broader question in this whole conversation that data sharing of state and local police and federal agents might be a recipe for this kind of potential for civil rights violations?
Well, I mean, again, let's put this in context. It's not, you know, these are onesies and twosies that are being stationed, you know, or given to the BRIC. This is not, you know, this is not like a command center where you go in and there's cubicle fulls of people looking at a map of Boston. You know, it's much more rudimentary than that. And then the question is a trade-off. You know, are the local police forces getting more value out of the information sharing than they're getting, and then they're getting in return for putting one of their individuals in the center? So, yes, you may have one less patrolman on the streets, you know, looking for the crime, but if he's responsible for getting information to 100 police officers that may stop an act of terrorism, I think that's a pretty good value proposition.
Tom Nolan?
I think the issue is that may lead to some problems is when you have in the room, in a fusion center, law enforcement, sworn law enforcement officers working side by side with trained intelligence analysts, that the tendency would be, and I trained on this with the government, for mission creep, and that the police officers are trained to detect crime and to conduct reporting in very specific ways that are markedly different from intel analysts. So when you have that confluence of the two types of people working together with the same mission, this is the end result of that, is the surveillance of people engaging in this constitutionally protected activity, intelligence reports being generated, and lines being crossed. And I think the public has a right to be concerned about this and to raise serious questions like we are now.
Mm. Tom Nolan, would you go further? I mean, you said these kinds of questions need to be raised. I mean, would you advocate that these fusion centers be shut down and that counterterrorism mission sort of reside elsewhere?
I think the counterterrorism mission already resides elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I think that the Department of Justice has an apparatus in place that is effective. The Joint Counterterrorism Center is up and running, and as Ozzie points out, it's at the national level. But we haven't seen any kind of fruit borne at the local level as pertains to acts of terrorism. So I think it's certainly fair to question why we need 77 of these, there are two fusion centers in Massachusetts. I would raise the issue as to why we feel the need to have one here and one located in Maynard in the state police.
Let's go to Russ, who is calling from Brookline. Hi, Russ, you're on the air.
How are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
I have a comment and a question, although the question may have just been answered, but my comment is I would love to live in a society where when our government wanted to do something like this, they took the attitude of, we're not going to violate civil rights. We're going to start an investigation. Then once we have some wins, we're going to go to our public and say, look, this organization has discovered these things and protected us in these ways. We would like to expand it. And that may come at a risk of your emails being intercepted, and put that to a vote. Instead, what we have now is we're going to interrogate peaceful citizens, and we're going to stonewall investigations. We're going to call it transparent, even though the ACLU has to win a court case, and we're going to deny it until we're legally required to tell the truth. And then we'll finally be like, oh, yeah, we investigated peaceful people, and we've put jackboots on local cops. But it's transparent, we assure you. So I would love it if civil rights were considered sacrosanct and people were considered innocent until proven guilty.
But Russ, we're going to have to just take that comment on board, and I'm going to thank you for it. Our time is running out, but thanks for the call. Ozzie Nelson, I want to give you a chance to sort of make a final thought. Respond to Russ or give us something to think about as we take this debate into the world after this show.
No, I think that we've had a good conversation, and again, you know, the answer is going to be in the middle. You know, these fusion centers can be valuable if the individuals are trained and equipped appropriately in preventing acts of terrorism. At the same time, you know, it's preeminent that we protect the civil liberties and civil rights of the United States, but we have to find that balance between security and privacy.
Find that balance, and as you said, work in progress. Rick Ozzie Nelson, Senior Fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. And Thomas Nolan is a former police officer and a former senior policy advisor for civil rights and civil liberties at the Department of Homeland Security. Thomas Nolan, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Anytime. Listeners, the conversation continues at radioboston.org. Post your comments there. And stay with us. There's more to come. Where do physicians stand on the physician-assisted suicide ballot initiative? I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.